Hello, this is Barbara Ridenour with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated Friday, June 12, 2026. We'll begin today's reading on the front page. Courts, Slover case, defense presses for new hearing. The only way to decide whether new evidence shows a former Decatur man and his parents were wrongly convicted of working together to kill the man's ex-wife is to have a new evidentiary hearing as a prelude to overturning their guilty verdicts. That is the conclusion of the latest 21-page filing in the more than 12-year legal battle to clear the names of Michael Slover Jr. and his parents, Michael Slover Sr. and Jeanette Slover. They were all convicted of the September 27, 1996 murder of Karen Hearn Slover, 23, who was shot to death and her body parts recovered from Lake Shelbyville 4 months after her divorce from Michael Slover Jr. was finalized. The prosecution theory of the case was and remains that Michael Slover Jr. and his parents would stop at nothing to prevent the victim from traveling out of state for a modeling job and taking their then 3-year-old son and grandson with her. The boy was even adopted by a sister of Michael Slover Jr. after his mother's murder, but that decision was later overturned in court, and she lost on appeal before guardianship of the child was finally given to Karen Hearn Slover's parents. All three Slover defendants were convicted of the murder at trial in 2002 and all received 60-year sentences. Michael Slover Jr., 56, was paroled in March of 2024. His parents have both since died in prison. Michael Slover Sr. was 75 and his wife was 77. The battle to clear their names is spearheaded by the Illinois Innocence Project and the Exoneration Project, whose attorneys work for free to write what they see as miscarriages of justice. The defense arranged for extensive new DNA testing and came up with unidentified profiles, a man and two women. It claims points to the real killers while excluding all three Slovers. After a prolonged legal battle, a judge ruled that the new DNA samples could be run through Illinois and national DNA crime databases, although no matches have been reported so far. The prosecution side of the case is being fought by former Macon County State's Attorney Jay Scott, who came out of retirement to take the case. He argues the new DNA samples prove nothing and has rejected defense attacks on evidence ranging from dog hair to clothing fragments that linked the victim's body/murder scene to the Miracle Motors used car lot in Mount Zion owned by Michael Slover Sr. The suggestion that others and not the defendants committed this crime ignores the evidence presented at trial and flies in the face of common sense, said Scott in an earlier legal filing seeking to dismiss the defense case. But attorney Carl Leonard, who wrote the new defense legal filing, argues that Scott is the one who got it all wrong. The newly discovered DNA evidence demonstrates that there is no forensic linkage whatsoever between any of the relevant physical evidence tested and the Slovers, Leonard said. That evidence absolutely undermines confidence in the judgment of guilt and creates a probability that a fact finder would reach a different result after considering the prior evidence along with the new evidence. It also argued that much of the evidence used at trial amounted to junk science that would not be accepted in a criminal court of today, and it's further claimed that the Slovers' defense attorneys at trial failed to do their jobs properly, further dooming the defendants to wrongful convictions. It now falls to Macon County Circuit Court Judge Rodney Forbes to decide whether to grant the prosecution's request to dismiss the defense's petition for post-conviction relief, or instead to give them a hearing to argue their new evidence in more detail. Leonard tells the judge that the decision he should make is clear. The state's contention that none of the petitioner's claims have any merit is premature. It is also flat wrong. Regardless, the only way for this court to test whether the cumulative effect of the alleged errors deprived Mr. Slover and his due process rights is to hold an evidentiary hearing, he said. The state's motion to dismiss this claim must be denied. Forbes has scheduled a hearing on the matter for July 9th. Feeling the heat. There are several large color photos here showing volunteers Zania Todd and Mariah Berglund of St. Teresa High School and Eisenhower High School, respectively, drop off more ice for the athletes in the hot weather during the Illinois Women's Pro Tennis Championships at the Fairview Tennis Complex in Decatur on Wednesday, June 10th. And then the two women here one has a bucket that she probably just poured ice into a cooler. There's an umbrella on a stand here. That's about all we see at the tennis courts. And then there's Violeta Martinez plays a single match during the Illinois Women's Pro Tennis Championships at the Fairview Tennis Complex in Decatur on Wednesday, June 10th. And we just see a close-up side view of her with her visor hat on. And she looks hunched, ready for a return with her tennis racket, which we don't see. And then chair umpires keep focus on their matches during the Illinois Women's Pro Tennis Championships at the Fairview Tennis Complex in Decatur on Wednesday, June 10th. And the women are sitting in these chairs with umbrellas over them, watching the matches. Also on the front page, Illinois proposed law targets unlicensed hemp shops. This is from the Chicago Tribune. After a federal law legalized hemp in 2018, Samuel Wilson co-founded Prohibition TH Cafe, which sells hemp-derived THC-infused edibles and beverages on the near south side of Chicago. For the informal 420 cannabis holiday on April 20th, the cafe partnered with Harold's Chicken to sell infused wings, with customers lining up down the block. But Wilson's Cafe may be put out of business by both a new federal law banning sales of intoxicating hemp and a proposed Illinois measure approved by lawmakers that would ban hemp sales other than by state-licensed dispensaries. The bill, which would have to be signed by Governor J.B. Pritzker to take effect, is meant to get rid of unscrupulous shops that sell untested, unlimited amounts of hemp to minors. It would also close businesses like that of Wilson, who says he sells only tested high-quality products to those 21 and over. I was that innovator who chased the American dream, Wilson said. To see that now in jeopardy after all the sacrifice and hard work I've done, it's a hijacking of small operators and handing it over to corporate cannabis. The bill marks a win for licensed cannabis businesses who say unregulated hemp shops are undercutting their sales while facing none of the same security restrictions, such as testing and labeling the content of their products. Cannabis operators lobbied for the sweeping legislation as a long overdue correction and the most significant improvement to the industry since recreational cannabis sales were allowed in Illinois beginning in 2020. The state ban on intoxicating hemp would be similar to, but much broader than, a federal law that would ban hemp sales of more than 0.4 milligrams of total tetrahydrocannabinols, the chemical component that gets users high. Both measures are scheduled to take effect in November. Wilson holds out hope that federal lawmakers will amend their law to allow hemp sales to continue, though any such change faces an uphill battle. The Illinois law would end unlicensed hemp sales in either case. Small hemp startups have grown to become a noticeable presence in Illinois commerce. More than 1,000 hemp retailers in Illinois generated some $870 million in sales in 2025, plus more than 500 wholesalers and processors employing some 13,000 workers overall, a Whitney Economic survey found. On the licensed cannabis side of the industry, dominated by multi-state corporations, the Illinois Omnibus Bill would make a wide range for changes. Perhaps the biggest change would be a doubling of the amount of licensed cannabis or THC that consumers may possess. For Illinois residents, the bill increased the limits to 60 grams, or about 2 ounces, of flower used for smoking, 1,000 milligrams in infused products like edibles, and 10 grams of cannabis concentrate. Out-of-state residents may possess half that much. Dispensaries would be allowed to stay open until 2 a.m. rather than the current 10 p.m., closing time unless local communities set other hours. Most importantly for medical cannabis users, the bill would allow any licensed dispensary to sell what's designated as medical cannabis, which is not subject to the same high retail taxes as recreational weed. Previously, only certain dispensaries sold such tax-exempt products, forcing purchasers in some cases to drive long purchasers, maybe purchases it says, in some cases to drive long distances. The ability to sell medical cannabis would also be an advantage for recent startup dispensaries who aren't able to do so now. It would also potentially allow them to take standard business tax deductions on federal income taxes, following the federal government's recent rescheduling to ease restrictions on the medical use of marijuana. For the first time, the bill also would allow drive-through service, and licensed cannabis would be permitted to be accessible in a car as long as it's in the original sealed packaging. Tiffany Ingram, executive director of the Cannabis Business Association of Illinois, which represents most licensed growers and sellers, welcomed the legislation. For years, the industry has been asking policymakers to do two things: modernize regulations that no longer make sense and address the growth of intoxicating hemp products being sold outside the licensed marketplace. Ingram told the Tribune, Senate Bill 3222 accomplishes both, making it one of the most consequential cannabis bills since legislation. As for hemp businesses, Ingram noted that their owners may apply for up to 145 new licenses that would allow them to infuse and sell products like beverages and edibles with THC. State Senator Kimberly Lightford, a Democrat from Maywood, had fought for such hemp restrictions for several years. Together, these changes formalize the hemp market, modernize cannabis operations, and lower barriers for both patients and smaller operators, Lightford said. If the governor signs the bill into law, it would immediately ban any sales of intoxicating hemp to those under 21 and would ban marketing that's deceptive or aimed at children, said State Representative Will Guzzardi, a Chicago Democrat and co-sponsor of the bill. It would also eliminate the costly dispensary requirement to hire a security contractor, allowing in-house security, since federal agencies lack the manpower to impose a hemp ban on thousands of stores nationwide. Enforcement likely would rely largely on state regulators and local police, which would be a challenge. And there's a photo here on page A2 that accompanies this article, and it shows Taja Egas left in the picture, a manager at Prohibition TH Cafe, explaining the menu to a customer on June 4th, 2026. And Ms. Egas is behind the counter, and there's a menu board with disposables, pre-rolls, house edibles. There's cookie, brownie, a crispy treat, several offerings. Happy hour, 15% off. And the back of the counter, the wall behind it is plastered with many posters. And there's a customer standing in front looking at the options. In more local news, on page A3, Route 66 Centennial Hot Rods roll through McLean. Power Tour celebrates Route 66. Engines rumbled down Route 66 on Tuesday morning as the Hot Rod Power Tour passed through the village of McLean, bringing a steady stream of classic cars, muscle cars, race cars, wagons, trucks, and modern builds through town. For some residents, it was a front row seat to a nationally known automotive event. For others, it was a family outing and simply an excuse to stand along the mother road and wave. Kendra Fink of McLean came out with her baby daughter, Ronnie, shortly after 8 a.m. Fink said her grandfather is a car fan, so watching the tour gave the family a way to think about him. My grandfather loves cars, so we're just coming out here and kind of spending our time thinking about him as we watch them, Fink said. Ronnie is intrigued by cars, and so she's out here waving to everybody. She likes when they go fast. Fink said that the cars kept coming throughout the morning, and the drivers made it feel even more welcoming to families. The Hot Rod Power Tour, now in its 32nd year, is one of the largest rolling car shows in the country. It attracted as many 7,000 vehicles this year, but numbers vary along the way. The year's tour allows Route 66, as the historic highway celebrates its 100th anniversary, with some side trips to sites that can accommodate a large display, such as the former Chanute Air Force Base that is now the Rantoul National Aviation Center and the Worldwide Technology Raceway in St. Louis. The five-day event began in Joliet and headed south through Illinois with a stop Tuesday in Rantoul and later stops planned farther west. For McLean and other towns tied to Route 66 history, the cars brought a burst of attention to local businesses, landmarks, and attractions. Savannah Beale, whose father, Daniel Beale, is the village president of McLean, said that she did not know much about the Power Tour before hearing from people in Atlanta that the cars would be coming through town. "Oh, I like it," she said. "I love old cars." Cars are already part of Beale's family. She said her family has a Ford T-Bucket and an older Chevy truck, while her father is especially fond of Mustangs. When visitors come through McLean, Beale said she hopes they notice more than the highway. "They've been doing a lot of stuff in McLean, specifically to help the visitors and tourists," Beale said. Along the route, Greg Gobelli of McLean brought out his 1990 Fox Body Mustang that was modified for autocross. Gobelli said cars are his passion, and having the Power Tour through town was a chance to see builds from across the country without leaving home. "It's beautiful to see all these nice cars go by from all over the country, too," Gobelli said. "Look at how far back it's getting lined up now," Gobelli said. He had followed the tour since he was a teenager and has long been a fan of Hot Rod magazine. As for his Mustang, Gobelli updated the electronics, addressed safety issues, and modified the body to fit wider tires. He now drives it in autocross events, including in Rantoul through the Champaign County Sports Car Club. For those interested but intimidated, Gobelli offered simple advice. "Just do it," he said. "Get your dream car and just do your thing with it. Join the club. Look at all these people out here having fun. That's what it's all about." Among the Power Tour participants was Jeff Moores of Lakemont, Georgia, who drove his 1964 Chevy Nova wagon through Illinois with co-driver Volker Kunzmann. Moores, a retired over-the-road truck driver, said he pulled the car out of the field about 10 years ago and finally got it running after retirement. Excuse me. "The wagon has become a rolling scrapbook. People and children sign and draw on it at his local drive-in theater, Tiger Drive-In, as well as at car shows and on tour stops. Messages fill the body until Moores eventually wipes it clean and starts it again. I redo it every year," he said. "I just start over again every year because by the end of the year, with all my activities with the car, it's covered." Like many other enthusiasts, Moores grew up reading Hot Rod and other magazines and dreamed about cars long before he had a license. "As a trucker, he saw the Power Tour from outside for years. I would run across the Power Tour annually in my trucking life," he said. "I'd see it and go, oh boy, I wish I could do that." Retirement finally gave him the time. Now nearing 70, Moore said the tour and Route 66 have the power to bring people together, especially when small towns lean into the moment. For him, the best part is not just the cars, it's the kids who stop to ride on his wagon, the families waving along the road, and the communities that make the old highway feel alive. I'm trying in my little missions on the side to get kids to embrace these old cars, Moore said. Maybe when they come of age, like me in high school, they'll pull out one out and get it running themselves. And there are several pictures here. There's the larger picture with locals in McLean watching and waved to cars driving past on Wednesday, June 10th, 2026, during the Hot Rod Power Tour in the village of McLean. And there's people sitting under a little canopy in lawn chairs. And there's a lamppost that's got a historic road sign, historic Route 66, visit McLean Depot. And then train shop, visitor center. And then we see in the picture, besides the people looking at the road, we see a red, I don't know what kind of car it is. It's got sport lines on it. If I knew, maybe it's a Camaro. It's a bright red. And then there's a line of cars in another picture. Classic cars making their way down South Main Street amid the traffic near the Dixie Travel Plaza in McLean on Wednesday, June 10th, 2026, during the Hot Rod Power Tour. And we see an old Ford truck and several late 50s, early 60s cars. That's what all I can tell. And a big, big red truck semi behind that. And then there's a sign, Hot Rod Power Tour, Hampton, Georgia, Columbia, South Carolina, Rockingham, North Carolina, Concord, North Carolina, and Bristol, Tennessee. So these are different 2023, 2024, 2025, and then Hot Rod Route 66 Centennial Power Tour. And the 2026 is in the flag and our country stars and stripes. And it says painless. And then it says their stickers are featured on a 1964 Chevy Nova wagon on Wednesday during the Hot Rod Power Tour in the village of McLean. The car is owned by Jeff Moores. That's the one we're just talking about, Lakemont, Georgia. So he's been to several power tours with his wagon. And then the final photo here is stickers and messages cover the 1964 Chevy Nova wagon on Wednesday, June 10th, 2026, during the Hot Rod Power Tour in the village of McLean. And that, again, is Jeff Moores of Lakemont, Georgia, who owns the car. And there's the sticker that says Route 66, 1926, 26, 100 years, and then people writing on it. I don't know what they write with, but it must be something he can clean off. Also in local news, Clinton blaze injures firefighter. Fire damaged a manufacturing building Tuesday evening in Clinton and sent one firefighter to the hospital with minor injuries, according to a social media post from the Clinton Fire Department. Firefighters were dispatched at 9:18 p.m. to 1600 East Main Street and discovered heavy fire conditions on the south side of the building, the post said. Crews had the fire under control within 20 minutes. No civilian injuries were reported, but one firefighter was transported to a hospital with a minor injury and has since been released. The department cleared the incident scene and was available by 2 a.m. the following morning. Although the cause of the fire is not believed to be suspicious, the incident is still under investigation by the Illinois State Fire Marshal's Office. And in local news on page A4, Juneteenth celebration planned. The African American Cultural and Genealogical Society and Museum is celebrating Juneteenth with 2 days of activities. the 32nd Annual Juneteenth Celebration Gala, will be at 6:30 p.m. Friday, June 19th, at the Grand Palace Banquet Hall, 3253 North Brush College Road. The celebration will begin with a drum presentation, Africa to America, The Journey of the Drum, featuring Trinity Bond and Terrion Moy. The guest speaker is Kimberly Hartfield, whose great-uncle was lynched in 1919 in Ellisville, Mississippi. Hartfield has visited the museum and found a photo of her great-uncle John Hartfield's lynching in one of the exhibits and will speak about that chapter in African-American history. Tickets are $50 each and are available by calling 217-429-7458. Again, 217-429-7458, or emailing accgsmuseum@gmail.com. accgsmuseum, M-U-S-E-U-M, @gmail.com. Juneteenth Emancipation Parade with Grand Marshal Stephanie King, a candidate for the Macon County Board, will be held at noon Saturday, June 20th, in downtown Decatur. It will kick off a host of family activities in Central Park featuring local artists and entertainment, black art, live music, community storytelling, and a variety of food and merchandise vendors. Guests are also invited to register for free giveaways, including gas cards and McDonald's ice cream treats for children. The evening will conclude with smooth jazz by Zach Sanders of South Carolina. Hartfield also will speak at the Saturday event. Summer lunch program underway. Decatur Park District's summer lunch program is underway. This summer marks the 43rd year the Decatur Park District and Illinois State Board of Education have partnered to provide free meals at park and school locations across Decatur as part of the summer food service program. Teams of Yellow Hat park leaders will be in 9 neighborhood parks during the lunch hour each weekday, playing fun games and leading educational activities. Lunches are provided free of charge to youth 18 and younger, Monday through Friday, until July 31st. The schedule, 1 to 2 p.m. in Garfield Park, Hess Park, and Johns Hill Park, 11:45 a.m. to 12:45 p.m., Monroe Park, Mueller Park, and Torrance Park, 10:30 to 11:30 a.m. at Oak Grove Park, Overlook Adventure Park Playground, and South Shores Park. Again, that's 1 to 2 p.m. This starts Monday through Friday until July 31st, 1 to 2 p.m. in Garfield Park, Hess Park, and Johns Hills Park, 11:45 a.m. to 12:45 p.m., Monroe Park, Mueller Park, and Torrance Park, 10:30 to 11:30 a.m. at Oak Grove Park, Overlook Adventure Park Playground, and South Shores Park. And that's all we have time for the first half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated Friday, June 12th, 2026. This is Barbara Ridenour. Please stay tuned.